The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, Tommy Dodd, my sweet, therapeutic, ooh, female-centric confidants. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure. I am your host, Kelsey Darrah. This is the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am so excited to introduce our two guests for this week. They are the Shrink Chicks, Emily and Jennifer, who are two female therapists based in one of my favorite cities, Philly, Pennsylvania. Thank you very much. Working to destigmatize therapy, open up the conversation to it by creating a non-judgmental environment, hoping to make therapy more accessible to people via their podcast, social media presence, and therapy practice, and the owners of The Therapy Group. Thank you guys so much for joining.
Thank you for having us.
Wait, also, let's talk about Philly for a second, because very rarely will people be like, oh, I love Philly. I fucking love Philly. It's dirty as shit.
So exciting when usually nasty.
Yeah, it's just so nasty, right? But usually non-Philly people are not repping Philly. Yeah. So thank you for that.
See, I think it's because I was originally born in California, which is like kind of nasty in its own right. But then I grew up in Florida, which is like a beach Philly almost. And then I go to Philly all the time for work, surprisingly. And my boyfriend has played a bunch of shows there. Bitches are hot as shit. The food is good as fuck. I love riding my little bicycle around the city. I've never had a bad time in Philly.
Yeah, I know. But it is. It's interesting, right? When you talk about Florida to Philly, there's like a difference between like sewer people and garbage people.
But we're still trash. Yes. And like, we don't talk to New Jersey. New Jersey's its own thing. We are like,
Right, absolutely.
We just go down the shore.
So tell me, what is like the therapist scene like in Philly?
It's saturated.
It is.
There's a shit ton of therapists in Philly.
Believe it or not, people are also really depressed in Philly.
Not always sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You guys have cheesesteaks. Impossible.
You would think that it would just take away everyone's mental health struggles. But believe it or not, people are also very depressed and anxious, I would say.
Everywhere. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you go.
I was just saying the general state of the world on fire, a lot of dumpster shits, you know.
You literally took the first question out of my mouth. I was going to be like, yeah, I want to know about like your personal journeys and everything. And that's all good. We'll get to that. But what the fuck are we supposed to be doing right now? Are you guys busier than ever? Like, what's going on?
We will speak for every therapist right now, which is we're very overwhelmed and we're very traumatized.
And everyone's therapeutic practice is full. If you're looking for a therapist right now and you're struggling to find one, it makes sense because everyone is in therapy.
Yeah.
It seems like therapists are also in therapy for the overwhelming clientele that I'm sure not only buffed up during the time of the pandemic, but also now with what's going on in the world. Like, what is the most common feeling or complaint that you guys are hearing?
Depression,
anxiety, general existential dread and crisis,
right?
I would say.
Such a fear of what could possibly happen next, right?
Yeah.
Feeling out of control of what's happening, which is, you know, pretty realistic.
And then I think also, right, like the reality is like we're millennials. We see a lot of millennials. We have like our entire practice is about being like psychobabble, bullshit free. We're not going to talk about those terms. We are all very red people. With that, we're also doing a lot of the same stuff as other people. So we're trying to shop. We're trying to travel. We're doing a lot of unhealthy coping skills in a manic way.
We're running out of shutting down. That's another really unhealthy coping skill.
It's like that euphoria sound that's like, wait, is this fucking play about us? Like, you guys are describing me right now.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, we're running out of skin to tattoo. You know, it's a thing that's happening. And
we're trying every coping mechanism we could possibly use.
But I think there's a few
things.
Girl,
I'm about to start ketamine therapy. Shit.
We were just talking about
I'm starting ketamine in a few weeks. That's so funny you just said that, if you want to talk about it.
Oh, I want to talk about it. Wait, I cut you off. So tell me what you were going to say, and then let's talk.
It doesn't matter. Let's go to ketamine. I don't know. I don't care.
Okay. Tell me. What? How could you, as the therapy group, be going to do ketamine therapy? You got to try it.
Because, one, I do believe in trying every single thing before I recommend it to a client.
Yes.
Like, that is a very big thing that we do. That if anything that we're recommending, we need to try ourselves. Because we're big believers that I can only take my clients as far as I'm willing to go myself.
Amen! And
so, right? Like, so, like, we really believe in, like, practicing what you preach and modeling all of that behavior. And ketamine is really big. It's, one, it's regulated. There are ways to do ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. If you are someone who has what's seen as treatment resistant depression, you are a very good candidate for ketamine. And the reality is we're talking more about psychedelics in general.
And there was no way for them to not start regulating it or implementing it because all of the research backs it up so much.
Yeah.
I always love to recommend the book. I'm sure you guys have read it, but How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. The godfather of psychedelic therapy research. It's one of my favorites. It took all my fears away about drugs and therapy because, again, I grew up in Florida. We didn't use that shit for therapy. That was like you're trying to get fucked up and go to the Ultra Rave Festival. You know what I mean? It was a terrifying taboo. But I think that that's like just points to, again, like you guys being these millennial therapists that can tell you like, hey, what your parents thought what treatment was. They literally used to put magnets on their head and electrocute each other. Like, we're past that. We're growing. We're learning. There's more options. Do you find something you're constantly talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. And you know what? We were taught a very specific way when we were becoming therapists. They told us to neuter ourselves, that, you know, we were taught about being a blank slate. And so we were really confused when we became therapists because what we know is the most important predictor of therapeutic success is your relationship with your therapist. And how do you build a relationship with your therapist if they're not a real human?
And maybe previous generations did, but this generation does not.
No.
Right?
I love that.
That's just the reality. Everything changes. And if we don't change with it, no matter what your industry is, you're going to be left behind.
I love that. We've had so many therapists on this year, and I don't think that's an accident.
In the last
year and a half, 2 years, where it's been so refreshing to like hear what they're talking to clients about versus when I first went into it, you know, at 15, 16, 17 years old, being like, I'm not going to talk to this old white bitch who knows nothing about me. She's not going to give a shit about what's going on with my high school drama. Like, I felt zero connection. But I wonder, kind of circling back to what we first started off with like the state of the world, how are you seeing the way people are taking care of themselves or responding or looking for therapy and treatment right now? How is that going to change the way we look at like mental health and therapy for the future? Yes, I'm asking you to predict the future.
We would love to predict it right now. Well, one of the things that we think is that even people like you that will sit on a podcast that has an audience, every time we scream from the hilltops, I go to therapy and this shit works, we are helping to destigmatize it. Every time we talk about, even if we're using unhealthy coping skills, every time we talk about self-injurious behavior, an unhealthy coping skill, shit that we did, shutting down, our worst moments, it is helping somebody else to be more vulnerable and connect to themselves. And the reality is that connection can help treat depression. It just can.
And it's becoming so much more. I think it's cool, like in high school now, to go to therapy.
Yeah, I think it is too.
Yeah.
Before, when I was in therapy, when I was 7 or 8, I remember my mom would be like, don't tell anyone where you're going.
Yes, it was a secret.
Yeah,
it was a punishment too. If you don't stop doing this, I'm going to send you back to that therapist.
Right. You have to go to the doctor, right? It was like a punishment every single time. And so
you guys,
now
did
it's
we have
cool.
the same parents?
Like, yeah, probably.
Name your mom and
sisters?
Dad. Is it Mike and Christy? Is that
yes.
But it was the same thing, right? And we hear it now. Sometimes we'll still hear it. A lot of times we hear it more with couples therapy in this day and age, where it says like, well, then I guess we have to go see a couples therapist because this isn't working.
Clearly, you're not changing.
But let's not use therapy as a threat, because every time we use it as a punishment and a threat, it actually re-stigmatizes it for all of us. We want positive feedback loops across the thing, right? I want to go to couples therapy with you because I love us and I want this to work.
And I want to be closer. I want more intimacy in our relationship. And I think that the really wonderful thing is that people are learning how to ask for help. Where I think there was a lot of messages in the past of just suck it up. You can do this yourself, right? And if you are asking for help, that there was, it meant you weren't strong in some way, right? Or there was a weakness, where we think it takes so much strength to be able to reach out and say, I need help with this. I really could use someone to talk to.
And if not now, sis, when are we, I mean, like, the rate we're going, good Lord knows something's going to happen that'll force you into it. But like, now is the time for everybody to be saying exactly what you're saying. I need help. I can't do this alone. Things don't feel right.
And I think that there's also something about this. The state of the world has almost normalized it for a lot of people, right? Where in the past, it felt embarrassing, like, oh, I don't need to go to therapy. I have to. Where now, there's so much more normalizing around it, right? Oh, well, we've been in a pandemic for, you know, 2 years at this point. Of course I need therapy. That there's so much more support around it, which I think is driving a lot of people into therapy, too.
Well, and the reality is also telehealth has made it more accessible. Virtual therapy does work, but it's also allowed people to feel like, well, how am I supposed to leave in the middle of the day? Or what am I supposed to do? And what if somebody knows? As opposed to, you want to know what? I can log on. I can talk to someone. I can get that support. And like, we want accessible therapy. Because also the reality is the disabled community has been asking for this for accessibility for forever. And our own ableism has kept that away.
Ooh, and it took a fucking global pandemic, the recession, or like the inflation and potentially World War III for us to go like, maybe we'll do what like the straight white rich guys need and make therapy more accessible from home. And I've said that BetterHelp sponsors this podcast. That wasn't an ad, but I have said, I don't think I will ever go back to in-person therapy, because sometimes what I didn't realize was like, I didn't feel comfortable enough in this space, even though I'd been going to her for years, that, you know, someone's tears were on this couch from half an hour ago that I was like, who cried here last? And I needed to be at home in my bed cuddled up with my cats in order to like cry and be as open and vulnerable as I could be. And I don't know if you guys see that change too happening.
Absolutely. There is something about being in your own environment. And also there's a level of safety. I think that it being telehealth, there's a level of safety there where like, if it feels unsafe, you could just close the computer. It's so much easier to just close the computer than fucking,
I don't like your feedback.
I'm done here, right? So there's some sort of like protection in a way that I think it allows us to be a little bit more vulnerable, where we can say, I'm going to open up. I'm in my own space. I have my cats with me. This is really helpful. It feels more comforting. While there is other people who do feel that getting out of their environment helps them a little bit more, especially if they're living with someone and they want to talk about the person that they're living with. Sometimes those boundaries are really necessary.
You know? Those floors are really thin in this
The amount of therapy that I've done with my telehealth therapy with my clients who have been in their car has been wild over these past 2 years.
Wow.
Couples in their
closets. So right.
Yeah.
With their kids' fingers coming underneath. But the reality is that we should all have options for what works for best of us. And that's the other thing is like, let's listen to some of these marginalized voices, because probably what they're saying probably makes a lot of fucking sense to have more options in this world. And why not make it accessible and all the different options for every different type of person of what works for them.
And can I just blame the patriarchy on everything, right? Yeah. Because my girlfriends who are Black women were like asking me for help, like, oh, where should I reach out for therapy? Because, you know, I am like the mental health guru of the group chat. And I'm like, honestly, here's my resources. I don't know that I can confidently say I know where to find women of color or indigenous voices or disabled voices or like pain management therapists. Like there's so many communities that like, again, going back to what you said, how do we change these systems? How do we say like, listen, you don't need to get into a prestigious university that, you know, only picks a certain amount of people, or like what can we do to make it more accessible and inclusive and diverse?
Well, what it really does often go back to money, right? Who are the people that are able to afford to go to grad school? And why is it that we have gatekept mental health that you need a graduate degree to do this? Why is this a thing? Why did I have to take Theater 100 and fucking to go to college to then pay a whole bunch more money to go to grad school? This really doesn't make sense, right? So there is a larger systemic issue, right? And then it also takes people like us, white cis women, saying, actually, what you do is you go to therapy for black girls, or you could look at inclusivetherapist.org and their directory system, right? If we all start educating ourselves and taking fucking responsibility, as opposed to being, we don't need to be white women that specialize in people of color. We should be white women that specializes in disarming white supremacy. That's not our fucking place. Let's stay in our own lanes. And that's okay. And that's okay. Doesn't say anything wrong about us.
Yes, that's the correct answer. Congrats. Yes,
it's very easy to do, actually, right? Like, this is actually something that's not that simple, complicated, unless you're resistant to it, right? It's very easy for us to say, well, who else is speaking on that panel? Wait, there's no one of color. There's no one in marginalized community. Then no thank you from us. Right. This doesn't make any sense. It's okay for us to say no to lots of stuff. So I think when we think larger terms, who can afford to go to grad school? Who is getting into grad school? We went to a program that it was mandatory to do it full time. So you were unable to have a job at the same time. Ooh. So who does that work for? Privileged folks.
Yeah. Right?
So that works for us from privileged communities. Yeah. But who else didn't that work for, right? So this comes from a larger systemic change. And this is the issue that also it can't be on individual responsibility. I don't work at a university. Right. I don't work in that larger system. I can use my voice. But when we make it about individual changes, we're also then not making those patriarchal white supremacist systems actually have to do hard work.
Say it loud. I mean, Jesus, I hope you've got this episode on repeat, confidants, because there is some knowledge being dropped right here. How do you think that, I mean, like, we're both all bitches with podcasts that are trying to help people. We have social media where we put out, you know, helpful therapeutic advice. Sometimes for me, it's more goofy and cat centered, and I don't have a degree. But what do you think about what our generation is doing in terms of accessibility to help that is helping break down a lot of barriers for people who alternatively maybe wouldn't be able to afford therapy or go to therapy?
I think the fact that we are sharing such knowledge in accessible platforms is so important. Mm-hmm. I do think it's important as you're listening to these things or you're looking at Instagram therapists to take what works for you and leave what doesn't. Because it's absolutely impossible for it to apply to everyone. Right. And that's the thing, is that you can kind of create your own knowledge by listening to these podcasts, looking at these different Instagram therapists, and kind of combining the things that work for you and saying, okay, well, what can I take from this? And then what can I leave behind?
I love that. I love, like, take what my yoga girl on my free YouTube channel every morning says, like, take what serves you and leave behind what doesn't. Like, we're here to serve you. And I'm like, ooh, I like that. It makes me wonder, because I, as a, again, non-degreed pseudo
We're
going to
give you an honorary
person.
Degree. I feel like you should get
God, from the therapy girl.
You're posting a lot of, like, cat stuff. I think that's very therapeutic.
Thank you. Okay. You know what? I will take that. Thank you very much. That does serve me. Just even as that person who's not in the business of therapy, I find myself constantly trying to keep up with the audiobooks and the therapy techniques. Like, literally in the other window on my other monitor right now, I have a YouTube video that's what is authentic relating. Like, I'm constantly trying to upgrade my knowledge. And I'm curious about what you guys, as professional therapists, what are you watching? What are you reading? How are you staying updated? And even, like, with ketamine therapy, right? Like, we know it's been around and legal for so long, but how are we now just kind of being like, yeah, you know what? We got to get this more involved and out there.
There is so much information. We always say that becoming therapists really ruined reading for pleasure for us, because we have so many fucking books that we read and are going to read. But we go to I'm going to a conference this weekend, like right after this podcast. I am leaving right after this podcast to go to DC to go to the Psychotherapy Networker. And so we go to conferences, we do readings, we do trainings, we listen to podcasts. I think also talking on our podcast really allows us to dive into more information. But it is next to impossible to keep up with everything. But we make sure that we continue to educate ourselves because we know that we will not get to a point where we're done learning, that we will be learners for our entire lives.
And shouldn't we all be?
And shouldn't we all be?
So you just finished Parents of Emotionally Mature.
Adults of Emotionally Immature Parents.
I highly
recommend. If you are a child who grew up with emotionally immature parents, that book will be so incredibly validating for you. Yes. You will cry while you read it.
It is incredible.
So,
And so I just finished No Bad Parts, which is about internal family systems theory. If you haven't read it, you have to read No Bad Parts. And now I'm reading Drug Use for Grownups. What is ethical drug use? Let's talk about how to have ethical drug use.
I love that. I mean, literally, I'm like writing these things down as you guys are saying them because I'm like, yes, love that one. I'm like, need to download the audiobook version. I'm trying to get through right now The Body Keeps Score again. I read it a long time ago, but I'm refreshing and it's so sad.
That's a hard one to get through, and it's heavy.
And that's the thing is that a lot of this stuff is heavy, especially if it touches on your personal experience.
Totally.
Right. And so it is okay to give yourself breaks, and we have to remind ourselves it's okay to read for pleasure and not just dive into therapy books constantly.
So that was one of my goals for this year, was to start reading for pleasure, right? Because I do think we always think reading has to be productive, but I don't think it does. What if reading is simply for rest and for pleasure and enjoyment? And I think that's the thing, is that we can sit here and be lifetime learners and I can read every fucking book, but holy shit, like, it's a lifelong thing. So how do I rest? How do I just take care of me? It's cool to do all this stuff, but like, self-healing doesn't have to be an obsession.
Right.
It can be something that we do constantly, the same way, like, when we're talking about any of different, like, long-term changes, it has to be a marathon, not a sprint.
I'm laughing because my boyfriend literally left this morning to go to the Monastic Academy, the anti-fragile heart healing retreat for a week. And I'm like, okay, we have become a little bit like obsessed. And I do wonder, like, how do you guys, because listen, y'all's business is a booming and stacked. If you go look at the therapy group, like, you guys are running a fucking business on top of all the social media, on top of the podcast, like, how do you guys, and don't lie to me, you tell me the truth about how you rest and relax and self-care.
Smoke pot.
Watch a ton of reality TV.
We like let our brains fry.
The weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from 30 doll hairs, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can, like, I can dress them up, I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew.
Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, like, we have to emotionally separate from it, right? And we always say, like, because our careers are around helping others, that you cannot take care of other people if you're not taking care of yourself first. Yeah. And sometimes self-care is just shutting your fucking brain down, because all we do is talk about therapy and talk about taking care, you know? And so it is okay to have those moments where you are shutting your brain down and kind of recentering and saying, I just want to watch Smoke Pot and watch some reality TV.
I like that we're calling it pot too. I feel like my mother, I feel like I'm such a boomer. Marijuana. But
the reefer.
The devil's lettuce. Have you read Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagowski?
I don't think I have. Let me look it up. Burnout.
Yeah, Burnout.
Write that down.
Oh, I wrote it down. I'm adding it to the pile.
And one of the things they really talk about is that research really does indicate that community care, community support is actually the answer to burnout. And when we make burnout about setting boundaries or individual systems again, once again, we're discounting the massive power of relationships. How I feel is sitting with my friends and fucking hanging out and laughing and having joy and having real rest, right? So it's amazing to do this work, but also, how do I recenter down and get some laughs in and have healing and rest that way?
Amen. And I think that that's obviously been hard because of the panini, the Patricia happening to all of us. Like, I definitely made my little bubble. We're all vaccine boosted. Yes, we pro-science here on this podcast. And still, I posted a picture of last week. I went to I went on a ski trip with a group of friends, and they had like sort of this after hour ski, like rave thing outside, and it was outside. I'm vaccine boosted. My boyfriend already had COVID. I didn't catch it. So I feel like pretty good. And still in the comments, I got people being like, this is so unsafe. This is like, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. And to me, I still feel like we're struggling with the panini, and I'm trying to go back to living my life. And I think I got caught up in, like, my first instinct was I wanted to get defensive and be like, no, I'm safe. Like, I'm outdoors. We were literally there dancing for like 15 minutes, but I didn't, because, you know, you don't want to engage in that kind of social media stuff. But like, how do we deal with the guilt of wanting to live our lives, go back to our friendships, like be as safe as we possibly can, and also giving a shit about like what other people think of our status as, like, you know, I felt like I was being called out as like an anti-vaxxer almost. Like, I was like, not the same.
You know, one of the things that we've really been able to learn from public health, especially from STIs, is the fact that risk management matters, and people are still allowed to have whatever sex they want, right? How do you have safe? And I want you to think about the same thing. I'm never going to shame anyone for a sexual decision they make. Every person gets to make that for themselves as long as it's consensual. That's all I care about, right? So risk management is a personal thing. Now, we're also talking about something that affects, in large marginalized and disabled communities, how do we protect other people, right? Yeah. So that being said, if you're thinking risk management for yourself, then how do you be also respectful? Hey, if I'm going to go hang out with other people, how do I test? How do I take care of myself? The same reason, if I was having sexual behavior and having a new partner, how do I test and take care of others? Because we should have group ideas of how I care for others. But it's the same type of public health risk management. How do we actually, right? Like, don't be fucking stupid. I don't know. Take the vaccine. Like, this is, we can't keep having this conversation. This is, right? Yes. You know, right? Like, the reality is like, I think last month they still did have the deadliest month that's been on record of the pandemic I saw, right? People really are. So how do we have, the reality is they're now calling it an endemic, which is what the flu season is.
Where it's how never are you going to be.
It's never, it's keep never mutating. Going away.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. But also,
we're just going to stop talking about it as much.
Yeah.
But also, once again, but we're maybe talking
not.
About it.
Maybe not. Maybe we'll talk about it forever. True. But I can imagine if there was, you know, if there was more kind of social media, if there was more ability to talk about when the flu came out, like, it would have been the same thing.
Good points. Yeah, points
so
were made,
right? And so when you want to think about what's, once again, we're talking about on an individual level as opposed to a larger public health policy. If they take away mask mandates, there's nothing I can do about that.
Right. That's kind of how I felt. I was in Vegas yesterday visiting family, and they're done with masks. And I was like, what the fuck? It felt That's, so crazy.
Right? Philadelphia had a full vaccine and mask mandate, and they just took it away.
Yeah, it's away.
Literally, within, like, I feel it like 24 is? Hours.
Yeah.
They just took it away. No, they're not checking vaccine cards anymore, and nope. We kind of love that. But,
Well, yeah, because, like, you guys who know your status and know your risk exactly. management levels, yes. like, you guys know what you are comfortable with. And I feel like that's where I'm getting, like, there was one comment that, like, stuck with me, and now I'm just turning this into a personal therapy
that's
session.
Okay.
I'm
that's okay.
Like,
let's do it.
Help
that's
me
it.
Work through this. Yeah, but it was, like, you know, people were commenting on the photo of me being at this, like, outdoor ski thing, and it was, like, I'm surprised that she posted this because she's an advocate for the chronically pained and ill. And someone else wrote, like, yeah, it's performative. She's giving me, like, performative activism. And I was like, how dare you? My entire life's work reduced down to a no contexted moment. Like, I just was so appalled that someone could feel that way about me. And then I had to go into my practice of, like, they don't know me, that, you know, if they're really feeling that way, like, maybe it is best they unfollow me, like, whatever's good for them. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if you guys struggle with this too, but, like, as therapists, do you constantly need to feel, like, not perfect? Cause, like you said, you're humans and that's, like, your superpower, but, like, I don't know. Do you struggle with anything like that?
Absolutely. Because we're human.
We're fucked up. That's why I'm a therapist, actually. My question,
my question is going to be, how many positive comments did you get on that? And how many neutral comments did you get on that, right?
It's way
wild. Exactly. And so it's wild because just as human beings, we look at the negative ones and we hold on to them. And they are so, so painful. And we talk about even in relationships, right, that it takes five positive connected interactions to combat one negative one.
That's research now.
That's research from the Gottman Institute. Yes. So right, so
oh, we talk about Gottman here.
Yes,
love Gottman.
Exactly. So we talk about it in terms of, like, it's a 5-to-1 ratio.
So
okay, so I got to go outside and, like, have people compliment me or something.
Exactly,
I gotta, like,
exactly.
Get out of here.
But you know, just when you're in the public eye, when there's a lot of, you are going to have people who are going to make comments that are hurtful, scrutinize, project their own stuff onto you.
Yes.
And it brings up, it's like people like to feel like moral elitism, right? Like, I'm better than you. And, like, right? Like, who did COVID
at the table?
Best? Yeah. Who did? I won COVID. I never went anywhere. I never took off a mask. Right? Like, nobody wins this. People have died. People have lost their
families. Everyone's,
like,
struggling in their own way, right?
It doesn't help anything to put more of that out. Like, nobody, like, White was the best COVID survivor, right? Like,
right,
the same thing.
Right.
And one of the things you've heard people talk about is, like, one of the things we've seen is when people actually get test positive is there could be a shame spiral that comes with it of, like, I did something wrong. No, same thing with the STI. It's not like that. There's nothing wrong. It just is. It's a virus.
And did you guys notice that, like, I felt like that, it, at least in LA, because LA was on and off the radars. Like, it was one of the most, you know, viraled cities, as we should be. We love the attention. Like, I felt like the shame of it stopped after Omicron with the super viral one, like the very contagious one. Like, in the beginning, it was like, oh my God, that person's so unsafe. Like, fuck that person for going out. And then it was like, well, now everyone has it and everyone's getting it and it's quick. And it's like, and I felt like the shame really just turned off one day and we were a little bit more acceptable.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think because everyone was getting Omicron. Also, I think because the symptoms were so much less severe.
Yeah. And the holidays.
Some people, for some people.
For some people, right? Yeah. Some people it really was.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting thing. So we both got Delta.
I love how, like, that. Thank you. That should be, like, on your resume, right?
I had
Delta. Very retro.
We got it at the same time.
We did. From podcasting.
Not because we were probably sitting into the same mic.
Actually, from my daughter brought it home from school. And that's the nice thing about having a kid, right? And so we got Delta, right? But I was almost embarrassed, especially when it was in August when, like, kind of no one was getting it. And I was like, oh my God, it was really bad, right?
And, but, wait, can we tell the story? So Emily said to me. Emily said to me, like, wow, like, I'm really not feeling well. And she was like, I was like, oh, maybe you have COVID. Like, you should probably get tested. And she was like, no.
Yeah,
and then she got tested. She called me back. She was like, oh my God, it's positive. And I was like, you know what? Now that you say something, I can't taste or smell anything.
Oh my God.
The better part of this story, you want to know, I'm going to really, you know,
okay,
what
now you're going to tell us.
I wasn't going to out us.
It was the day before.
Tell us!
The day before, we had a fully outdoor staff party. We, no one else got it besides us. It was all outdoors, spread out at my house. But the next day we had to email the staff and say somebody tested positive.
We said somebody tested positive. It was us. It was the fucking owner.
This just said this podcast episode with the timestamp link
we already talked about it on the podcast. But during that time, we had so much shame around it, right? And we had been so careful in all of our offices. And so many people weren't going back. And we were like, okay, things are like lightening up. We can have like an outdoor party. We want everyone to feel connected. We know this has been a really tough time.
Yeah.
Everyone was vaccinated. No one else got it, for the record. Just us.
Wow.
But right, like, but it, the thing is, like, even when you make the safest decision, sometimes it's not about someone being wrong or bad. It's just a fucking virus, man. Like, we cannot put morality the same way that food shouldn't have moral value. It's not like that.
I think this is such, like, I'm so glad we talked about this, just because it's not a conversation. Like, you're all about destigmatizing. You guys are doing like all that kind of work. And I think that that shame plays into this part of all of our millennial lives that we're going to, millennial Gen Z, that we're going to like remember for the rest of our lives. And I think that like this conversation is important to have, and it hasn't been talked about a lot. So I appreciate you guys for like sharing that part.
You didn't think this is where this was going to go today.
I didn't. I haven't looked at my outline in like 20 minutes. I've really just said, fuck it, throw it to the wind. I'm just like, let's just talk, you guys. Let's just hang out. Let's just be pals. It did make me wonder, like, how you guys, you know, when we're talking about, do you ever feel this need to be perfectionist, or like you're supposed to have it all together? Like, you know, I totally agree with you guys on that. You want a human being as a therapist. You don't want a blank slate or a robot. How do you help other people understand that? Because I get asked all the time, where do I start? How do I find a right therapist for me? That's like the most common question I get asked. How do you sort of destigmatize this idea of like, no, the person you're going to for help is supposed to be perfect and better than you and have their lives together? Not like if they have it figured out, wouldn't they be perfect? Like,
I do think that there are clients who want a therapist like that. Like, that there are definitely clients who
want... Well, they want a guru then.
Right. They want a guru. They want someone who has all the answers, right? That there's... And that's not the type of... I mean, we help guide clients to finding answers for themselves, finding a life for themselves that they're going to be happier, more content with. And at the same time, being very open and honest and being very connected to ourselves, because we have done this work for ourselves and continue to do this work for ourselves. And so I do think that there are clients who maybe want someone who comes from a one-up position and says, I have all the answers and here's what you should do. We come from a one-down position where we are very much helping clients to figure out who they are, find the best way that they can live their life, because we don't feel like that's our job to tell them how to live.
Wow. That was very insightful. And I love the idea of like, it's also okay if you want that and maybe that works for you, but you shouldn't be afraid to change it up and try something new if it doesn't. And I think the most successful therapeutic relationships I've had is women around my age or gay men. But I tried to stay away from gay men because it was like too comfortable. Like, they were more like my pals. And I was like, no, I do need that little bit of edge of like telling me sometimes what, not what to do, but like how to do it, pointing out my flaws. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's also sometimes you don't know what works until you try it, right? So like if you're someone who's like thinking about going therapy, like I want to do some therapist shopping, try a little bit of everything, right? Like it's okay to when someone offers you a free 15, 20 minute phone consult, take it.
Do it.
Don't say like, oh, let me just book. Take that time and use up that time. Do not feel
if you connect with the person.
Exactly, right? Sit there, ask questions. What is the session going to look like? What does the intake look like? Do you give homework at the end, right? Like there's so many questions you can ask in that. And I would really encourage you to do that and try different things that work for you, because sometimes you don't know until you know.
You don't know until you know. I have like kind of a selfish foundery question, since you guys are co-founders of the therapy group as like a full-fledged like mental health business. Yes, ladies. I started a company during the pandemic, nothing to do with therapy. It's a home decor trading app. It's not launched yet. Anyways, but like as founders of this, how was that journey of building a business on emotion? You guys are already laughing. Like, I want to know. Tell me what you're laughing about, because
We're laughing because we're still on the journey.
Yeah.
Very much.
I love it.
You know? And so it has been a fucking journey, yeah. If anything. Oof. I mean, Emily and I met in grad school. Mm. And decided right after grad school that we were going to start a business together.
So 2012,
10 years ago. Wow. Yeah.
And so
all I knew was I can't fucking work for one of these fucking assholes. All I knew was that I was way too fucking bossy to ever work for someone else. And yes. I had to beg and plead, Jen, please, you have to start it because I can't afford to do it on my own. I'm too poor. I was like, I don't have any money, so I need someone else to help me here.
So, I love that.
And so that's what we did. And we were very young, but we also knew that we wanted to start a therapy practice that was based on our values of having clinicians that are very down to earth, that you feel like you connect with as a human being. And that's really what we've built our practice around. But to be completely honest, like, we're figuring it out as we go along. And as the business has grown. And so as the business grows, we have to grow with it. And so, you know, I think the best thing we could say is it just to allow yourself to grow, to allow yourself to step outside of your comfort zone. You know, when we started the podcast, I would have rather died than talked on a podcast.
You're kidding!
I swear to God,
the amount of begging I've had to do for most things with Jen. Jen is our introvert.
I am very introverted,
but it
works. It works, right? But it's you have to step outside your comfort zone in order to grow, and both of us have really had to do that in this process so much. I think the really good thing is that Emily and I have great communication between the two of us. And that's also amazing. Check ourselves constantly about our own shit. Like, we will have therapeutic conversations in the context of business all the time.
Aww, I love that.
The thing I would say is also, like, I think in this generation, all of us want to be perfect and great at something at the beginning. We were very bad at this at the beginning. We started out in a basement office with fucking animals and charging $60 a session,
like, cave
right?
Crickets.
Oh my God.
We had rented furniture. We couldn't afford to buy furniture.
Right, I forgot.
Right? Like, right, rented, and then, like, some shitty old IKEA couch my brother gave us. So, it's okay for it to not be gorgeous and perfect and beautiful at the beginning, right? Sometimes shit is really messy. And so what I would say to anyone developing anything is let yourself fail and don't give up, right? Like, it is okay for this to not be perfect. And I think especially in our generation, there is a lot of perfectionism, and there is a lot of, like, I if I put it out there and people see it and then it doesn't go well, what are they going to think? Sure. And that was a big fear with the podcast too. If we start recording, everyone's going to make fun of us, because who doesn't have a podcast these days? Right. Although it was in 2019 and a few less people had it.
Yeah, a little bit early.
So, but the thing is, like, all of us are so worried about failing. Yeah. Let yourself fail in front of other people. Let yourself fail for yourself, because that's fierce self-compassion. If you haven't read Fierce Self-Compassion,
honestly, I am a book whore. Obviously, you can see, like, my studio. There's a whole nother bookshelf. I'm like a book whore.
Okay, we're gonna send you a big book list.
Well, and I also think we so often see people's end result because of social media that we don't we're not necessarily seeing the process that, like, no one saw the 10 years that we worked to get to this point.
Before the 30 clinicians, before the all the followers.
And so I think people put so much pressure on themselves to do that right off the bat, because that's all we're seeing through social media, right? We're only seeing the successes. And so for anyone who's listening, who's starting a business, who it takes so much time and it is such a journey. Once again, we're still on that journey. We still have to have difficult conversations all the time and grow with the business. And so just knowing that to you know, demystify the fact that it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of pain too to get to this point.
Yeah. How else do you grow?
Yeah.
I love too the idea of, like, therapeutic sessions for business, because that's my team is all women. We're all very in touch with, like, our zodiac signs. Like, we start every meeting with, like, a personal win and a business win. Like, I just do think women make better leaders. That's all another podcast conversation.
No, we agree. We agree.
Yeah. Okay. Good. holy shit, you guys, Jen and Em, you guys are absolute gems. Ha. that rhymed. I should be a poet. I would also love to be friends IRL because, like I said, I come to Philly all the time. And if you guys come to LA, I want to be friends.
Absolutely.
And please tell us, confidants, where we can find the shrink chicks, where we can find the therapy group. How do you want to be found and used, babies?
So if you're looking for a clinician and you are in Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, Florida, or California, we would love to help you find a clinician that works for you. If you are looking and just thought, hey, I'd like some free content, you could check us out. Shrink Chicks, anywhere you get your podcast or on YouTube. We have social media where we put out lots of free content as well with Shrink Chicks or at the therapy group. But it's spelled different.
GRP, not GROUP.
The person who owns it tried to charge us like
$10,000.
We said, we'll just take the fake one.
So we got the fake one, GRP.
Yes. Fuck that guy.
I had to buy my name
from someone who didn't. Their name wasn't even Kelsey Dara. The confidants know that story. It was a whole saga. But
right. If you're looking and looking for an amazing clinician, even, you know, let us try to help you out. We believe that every person deserves unconditional positive regard, deserves to feel safe in therapy, deserves to fucking grow whatever their speed is. We want to meet you exactly where you're at.
I can't think of a better little topper with a cherry on top. You guys have been so great. Confidants, please check out all those links below. And I would love to include the book list you guys sent out.
Oh, yes. I'll email you. Yep.
I will put those links below as well. Let's do like a little book club this month with it. And don't forget to listen to Shrink Chicks, the podcast. That will also be linked below. And hey, give us a 5-star rating. I think we like could all do a little good right here. Go over to Shrink Chicks, give them 5 stars. Give Confidently Insecure 5 stars. Like if you're just feeling lovey and happy after this bubbly episode, like go ahead and throw us a 5-star rating. And we will see you next week. Thanks, Jen and Em.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.